This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9. Bent Notes is our weekly jazz program going to air each Sunday night.
My very special guest on Bent Notes is a vocalist, improviser, songwriter, performer, flautist and educator. What a list that is. It's my pleasure to bid a very warm welcome to Bent Notes here at Joy 94.9 and to Australia. One half of the French duo, Madeline and Salomon, welcome Clotilde.
Hello.
It's great.
Thank you for having us.
It's been great to have the opportunity to speak with you, Clotilde. Now, you've been performing for a number of years, but I read that when you were a child, you wrote in your diary that you had decided to be either a singer or a psychoanalyst when you grew up. Now, they seem to be very different options. When did you realise that music and singing was going to be your longer-term career?
I think that I started the music very early, so music has been part of my life quite always, I would say. And I decided to make music. I asked my parents if I could make music because we in France we have this opportunity of the music conservatory of music, you know, which are public and very good level for not much amount of money. So it's really cool.
Yes.
So music, I've always been here, and when I grew up and started studying and all this stuff, actually each time I was about to take another direction in my life, music came back via meeting someone or discovering something or whatever, but it was always like I was bumping into something, always like saying to me, you have to keep on going, making music or performing, singing and all this stuff. So it's very funny. And it's still the case, actually, because from time to time, as I suppose most of artists, generally speaking, you have this moment of doubts when you think, like, what am I doing here? And each time I'm like this, a bit down and thinking, okay, I should stop or I don't know, should do something. Then I meet someone or I have this kind of conversation with someone saying or something happens or someone tell me randomly, you know, it's always a different way, but it's in the direction to me keeping on going, playing music. So it's very funny. It's like I have to.
That is very interesting to hear. It's as if you have a predestined path, and each time Maybe. You think of veering from it, someone comes in to push you back on the path again.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's a kind of.
Your family have obviously supported you. Were they musical themselves?
Yes, true. They were just, can you say radiophile? No, maybe not. Like they were radio listeners and radio yep. lovers. And in French we say radiophile, that's why I tried.
Because oh, right.
Sometimes, you know, yeah. you have words that works in both languages.
Yes.
And so, yeah, they were listening to music all the time. I mean, through the radio, because we have a very nice national radio called France Musique, and we have a great and very eclectic musical program. So it's really cool as a child to be in that environment, because there were no barrier. Like, we could listen to jazz, to completely crazy contemporary free stuff, to pop, to folk, to classical music, you know, during the day could change a lot.
So even if you'd not wanted to listen to music and radio, you would have had it in front of you anyway.
Yeah, exactly. It was all around. And my mom said that even when I was a little baby and when she was going from a room to another one doing her stuff, actually if she wanted me not to cry, she had to turn on like Mozart or some things like that, you know?
Oh, that is wonderful. That is wonderful, Clotilde. I'm very pleased to hear that the music has such an effect from such a young age.
Yeah. It's really a part of my life, definitely.
What's your earliest memory of music?
I think it's really the radio programs, and especially when we were traveling, visiting like my grandparents or things like that. My dad used to prefer to drive at night. Suppose we were less, excited. Like, because we were three girls, so I think it was more quiet for him to drive at night.
Yeah.
And
when you three were a bit tired and potentially sleeping.
Exactly, which were not exactly the case all the time, but this is another story. And he was turning on again the radio while he was driving. And I really have this very strong memory of, and at night, the programs on radio are usually more the niche kind of music, like, the free jazz or the experimental things or contemporary pieces, everything like this. And I really have this deep memory of, like, being almost asleep, like an in-between sleep, and looking at the lights, when you're driving on the highways.
Yes.
And you have the lights in the night of the cars going through and back, and the moon, and on the background, this very weird music being played. So it's funny.
What a wonderful way to get exposed to such a range of music in that environment where you've got the visual aspect to consolidate it for you.
True.
Yeah.
That's true.
Were there specific performers who you heard in the early days on radio that you feel now really contributed to your drive into the musical field?
Yeah, I do think so. And also we were talking about it with Alexandre, actually, lately. We grew up in a generation with cartoons on television, which were very high quality, with great composers who composed the soundtracks, like the great composer Cosma. Yeah, am I right, Alexandre Cosma?
Yes.
Yeah, from a cartoon that we all loved and was called The Engulfed World, the Les Mondes Engloutis in French.
Right.
And so we had all these great composers. And so I think also this is this has somehow shaped our ears, because this was really experimental music somehow, with a kind of some drops of like funk or soul or jazz beats or grooves, with some like very dreamlike vamps or things like that, and weird instruments in the background, because it was the beginning of the electronic keyboards, with all these really weird sounds.
And you've got to try them out.
Yeah. So I think it's also has shaped very a lot my feeling of the music, and Alex too. Yeah.
I think they certainly were the days when cartoons had an amazing musical experience, quite apart from the actual fun and games of the cartoons themselves. I don't know that the music of today's cartoons has quite the same impact or integrity, even might be the word for it.
Yeah, I don't think so, actually. And Alexandre has two little girls, so we were talking about it in that context, like comparing to the cartoons today. Yeah, it appears that it's less creative, actually, and actually less. Yeah, it's less creative, less experimentations in the music of the cartoons. But I would say in the music of movies, generally speaking.
Yes, very much so. Now, your first album you purchased was, as I understand it, a compilation of Ella Fitzgerald.
Yeah, definitely it was.
with such a broad range of music available, why was it Ella?
Oh, gosh, I think I heard her on radio and I was completely amazed by her voice. And and I remember that at that time you could buy, like, you would go to the newspaper shop, and there was, I don't know if you had this in Australia too, but you could buy like a little book with pictures and the story and everything, and the album all included for a not very expensive amount of money, because it was my pocket money with which I bought this first CD.
Yeah. And so, did you wear that CD out?
Yeah, I still have it, definitely.
Excellent. My guest on Joy 94.9 here on Bent Notes is vocalist, improviser, songwriter, performer, flautist and educator from France, Clotilde.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Find more Joycasts and show blogs, go to joy.org.au.
On Joy 94.9, my Bent Note special guest is vocalist, improviser, songwriter, performer, flautist and educator from France, Clotilde. Clotilde, it's great to have you talking to us here on Bent Notes and to hear where you've come from with your musical journey. I did read something that said that one of your aspirations when you're performing is to take your listener on a journey.
True.
What,
yeah.
Is that a journey that you have thought about and planned, or is this one of these journeys that just is improvised?
Yeah, I think it's maybe both. Because in the choice of the repertoire we're making, there's some crossroads or markstones. Can you say that?
Yes, you can.
So on the journey. But definitely, it's loads of it will be improvised depending on the reaction of the audience and on the sound of the place, of everything. And I think it's also one of the things with the voice. Voice is such an organic, an organic instrument, you know.
Yes.
Because it's inside yourself and it's not made by a human. It's really you vibrating. And this is the beautiful thing with voice, and that's what I always say to my students that I'm teaching, not to try to project and impose. Can you say impose?
Yes, you can.
Your sound to the audience, but more vibrate yourself so that your vibration is going to resonate on your audience. You know, so it's more like a back and forth exchange of vibration and resonance. So yeah.
And that certainly makes it such a much more interesting performance when, as an audience member, you're essentially invited in, I suppose you could say.
And
you are part of that that journey. Do you find that, does the audience reaction affect how you take them on the journey?
Yeah, I suppose so. Yeah, definitely, definitely. It's not the same if we have a... Plus, I think you can feel the audience, and sometimes we have a very quiet audience. And for some musicians, it can be scary. But I mean, we don't care if you feel that the audience is very quiet because they're really into such a concentration in their listening, a bit like a church, you know?
Yes.
when the priest is preaching, kind of a trance. So this can be a very, very intense moment, but also like an audience clapping after each song to show up the happiness of being here or their gratefulness of being here with us is also great, but it's definitely two different energies, so we will definitely react differently, and adapt to it. And that's the magic also in being in a duo, and why we love so much playing acoustic instruments. Because also we're very both into harmonics and of the sound. It means how a sound is developing itself, around itself, and how it can create some different layers and textures. So, yes, and this is also part of the journey,
And that journey has taken you all the way from France to Australia, but it's not the first visit to Australia. I understand that you were here in 2015.
Yeah, we were both with Alexandre here in 2015, and I was here longest time ago with my quartet. It was my first time in Australia at that moment. And it was, I think, something like 9 or 8 years ago, something like that.
Okay. Now, you were here in 2015 with Alexandra, who is your pianist in the duo. As I understand it, because I didn't get to see the show at that time, you were performing the Madeline and Salomon project. Am I correct in saying that?
Yeah, exactly. We were performing quite of the same, but it was the first time when we came.
Right, so that was that was the start of that project.
Exactly, it was the very beginning. Actually, it was the origin of the project, and then after that, we recorded the album and we toured quite a lot with this.
So you used us as a test bed.
Actually, this project has born on the impulse from the Melbourne Recital Centre.
Was it really?
It was, Yeah, so it's more than a test. It was really like the first day.
Oh, wow.
Of the thing. Yeah, because I had played at the MRC, so with my quartet before, and then Kirsten, who was managing the MRC at the time, asked me to come back with the special eye, my eye, definitely my eye on the American Songbook for the series they had. I don't know if they still have the series in June around the American Songbook. And that's how everything started. So it's like it started here somehow.
So Madeline and Salomon is, what would you call it, a celebration of the American Songbook?
Yeah, it's a tribute to the greatest American female protest singers.
Protest singers.
Did I put all the adjective in the right way? No. Greatest American female protest singers. Yes, that's the right way.
But you
so
haven't.
Sorry.
You haven't done their songs the same way they would do them.
No,
you've done them your way. How did you approach that? Because the songs that they would sing, so well known in their styling, here you were trying to reinvent them.
This is where the collaboration with Alexandra is so important in this project, and why it's a proper duo, and that's why we decided to have also a band name, Madeleine and Salomon, that you mentioned earlier. It's because we really took time, like we started, we had a few songs in mind that could work well with the idea, with the concept of the repertoire. And after that, we spent a lot of time exchanging, talking about it, sharing links, digging in the internet, and trying to find songs that we could really make our own way. That would mean regarding the words, like, because I wanted words that I could sing and feel legit to sing them, you know?
Yeah.
So it's very important when you're getting into those very deep words of protest singing to find words that you really can embody and make yours. Also, musically, it was the same question, like, what could we do with the song? And we actually went through songs that we never succeeded in making an interesting version to our point of view. So, yeah, it's been a long time of work, but that was nice, actually, because it means that we took, like, probably 6 months seeing each other. Am I right? Like, 6 months or something like that, I think. Seeing each other, like, every week or something like that, to rehearse, to share, to develop things, which is quite rare now.
It's a lot of time to spend working on a project, isn't it?
Yeah. We really took our time because we had time because the MRC gave me the commission very long time ago. So it's long time in advance, sorry. And that was really profitable for creating our sound to take this time, which is pretty rare now. So it was more like a rock band way of creating, you know, than a jazz one.
Yes.
Most of the time now, the jazz musicians, they just send each other some stuff and charts, and they see each other once, and boom, we play, you know.
So when we'd hear the songs done in the show, are you taking us on a journey through these songs, through different aspects of the protest movement?
It's a bit like being in a woman body of different age, witnessing the world around her and also inside her, and sharing her thoughts. That's the thing, I think.
Do you have any favourite pieces, or is there a particular piece in the project that is really your favourite piece?
Oh, gosh.
Is there one that means a lot to you?
I love them all because they're very different and they talk about so many different things like self-esteem or ecology or maybe there's one I love, and because I loved it before, it's the one from Marvin Gaye, and then you will tell me, but Marvin Gaye is not a female singer. You would be right. But actually, I've been so inspired by Marlena Shaw's version that she recorded very, very few time after he put it out. so that's why it's in, and it saved the children. And I really, I loved this song before, and I'm happy we covered it, and I like what we did with it, actually.
Well, I reckon we might conclude our interview then by playing Save the Children as a means of tempting our listener to make the trip on the internet to jazzlab.club, which is the Jazz Lab website here in Melbourne, to search for this coming Wednesday night, the 14th of March. You're on stage from 8 o'clock, and I reckon that's going to be a fantastic show from what you've described there. And I'm certainly looking forward to it, Clotilde. I trust that you too are as well. You're travelling around the countryside. I think you're in Brisbane. Yeah. You've been elsewhere in Australia. You're coming down to Melbourne this week, and then you're back to France after that.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. We were in Sydney and we're now in Brisbane and for two nights and then in Melbourne, and we're so happy. And yeah, and I hope you all guys will come to this show, because I'm very excited to bring it back to Melbourne, actually. I love Melbourne, so it's going to be fun. And also there are projections of screening of images behind some songs, so it makes it very special. It's not just a random concert, I think.
That's harking back to our earlier discussion about travelling in the car as children, watching the stars outside with the music playing.
Yeah,
we'll be able to experience the same thing with you at the Jazz Lab on Wednesday night.
Yeah, it's the first time I'm making the link.
Well, I'm sure it will be a very good link indeed. Clotilde, thank you so much for your time chatting with me here on Bent Notes. It has been a thrill for me to do so, and I'm looking forward to a great night of music on Wednesday night.
Thank you so much. It was a really pleasure, and see you soon.
Shall do. And let's have a listen now to Save the Children.
When the world won't be singing, flowers won't grow, bells won't be ringing, who really cares? Who's willing to try to save a world that is destined to die? When I look at the world, it fills me with sorrow. Children today really suffer tomorrow. Ooh, what a shame, such a bad way to live. Who is to blame when we can't stop living? Live, live for life, but let leave everybody leave. Life for the children, save, save the children. Fresa, 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 fresa
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.